That's big time.
Minus 15.
Respect all, fear none.
Oh, did he belt that one?
Intensity is not a perfume.
It was a no doubter.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We are up in the bird's nest here at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Matt Bonaparte. If you saw us a few minutes ago, hey, shut up. No, you didn't. We have our audio issues fixed, and we are back for an exciting day here in Birdland as the number one overall prospect in baseball, Jackson Holliday, is promoted to the big leagues, expected to make his major league debut tonight.
Yes. Ooh. In Boston at the Fens Historic Ballpark.
The Fens, as many people refer to it.
Yeah, the Fens, man. Yeah. Fenway Park.
Sure.
Very exciting for Jackson, of course. Very exciting for the Orioles fan base and everybody surrounding this team. I'm excited. You're excited. I'm excited for when he comes home this weekend. This is just an awesome day and an awesome week.
Yeah, expected to see Jackson Holliday here at home on Friday, and we are expected to see him in the lineup tonight against a right-handed pitcher in Cutter Crawford up in Boston. So Jackson Holliday is here. It is time that a lot of Orioles fans have been waiting for. Do you want to hit a quick note before we get to Jackson Holliday? Obviously, that is going to be a majority of the show today is talking about Jackson. But Kyle Bradish heading down to Aberdeen for a rehab assignment, that is also very exciting.
Yeah,
this is a guy who finished top five in AL Cy Young voting last year, and the Orioles already have a bona fide ace in Corbin Burnes, who has an ERA below 2 in his first three starts as an Oriole. Grayson Rodriguez is living up to his billing as a potential future ace and maybe turning into one right in front of our eyes right now. And to get Kyle Bradish back in this rotation, the struggles with the Orioles so far, if you want to call them struggles through 10 games of the season, it's not a very big sample size, has mostly come on the offensive side of the ball. The pitchers have done a good job of keeping them in games right now, but Kyle Bradish still obviously would be a massive boost.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that the fan base had all the optimism in the world surrounding Kyle Bradish's return.
No, because you hear UCL and you go, uh-oh.
And, you know, I'm not blaming them. You know, right. I wasn't probably as optimistic as anybody could have been either, but it's really, really encouraging to see that he's actually going to start a rehab assignment. That's a lot closer to making it back to the majors this season than he was a couple days ago. So that's incredible news for Orioles fans that Kyle Bradish is on his road back to the mound in Baltimore, because we all know how important he was to the team last year. And like you said, adding on to a rotation that is fronted by Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez, who have both performed as aces thus far, that would be huge. So Bradish's return is massive.
Yeah, I don't know how quick the return is going to happen. Yeah. I would anticipate that we're probably still looking at a month or so for Kyle Bradish, because he's starting in Aberdeen, and then from Aberdeen, you're probably going to Bowie. You're probably going to Norfolk as well. I would imagine that he gets a few starts at Norfolk. I don't know if he's going to get more than one start in Aberdeen. Maybe he gets a start with the Ironbirds and then two starts with the Bay Sox. And
yeah.
Four starts with it. I don't know how the breakdown
is
going
to work. No spring
training,
so they got to build him up.
Right.
You know, he'll get a few starts here and there, a lot of bullpens probably.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. You could essentially say that this is just a late spring training for Kyle
Bradish.
Yeah, it's
pretty much what it is.
Obviously, there's an injury involved, and the Orioles are going to ramp him up pretty slowly, but you would ramp up somebody in spring training pretty slowly as well before they start getting to 70, 80 pitches, and then finally to a pitch count that is suitable for big league action. So regardless of what the timeline looks like, I think it's just exciting in general that the Orioles are confident enough in Bradish's elbow where he doesn't need to miss a significant amount of time, and he's at least getting back into game action somewhere.
Yep. I'm excited to see what the rotation looks like with him in it. Tyler Wells and Cole Irvin have gotten their starts. Wells has struggled a little bit, but his starts have been interesting because it kind of off the rails in the beginning, and then he kind of gets it down towards the end of it. Irvin, we expected a lot, haven't seen exactly what was maybe encouraged. So one of those guys, when Bradish returns, will head to the bullpen. But the rotation with Bradish will be very exciting.
It will. Let's talk about another exciting thing in Jackson Holliday. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Officially promoted to the big leagues, a move that a lot of fans I know were hoping for on opening day, but it happens 10 games into the season. He will wear number 7. Which is pretty cool, because if you remember, his dad was a pretty good ball player, wore number 7 for a few teams. So Holliday carrying on the family tradition there of wearing number 7, and also just a cool Orioles tradition of wearing number 7. Cal Ripken Jr. tweeting out this morning that he was excited to see Jackson wearing the number 7. It was Cal Ripken's dad's number 7.
It was.
So exciting for Jackson to don that number.
Yeah, unofficially retired until now.
Right.
Which is pretty special for Jackson to don that number. I was watching MLB Network, and Billy Ripken said that, you know, him and Cal talked about it. Cal called him and was like, I mean, if anybody's going to wear it, it's probably this kid, right?
Right.
So that's a pretty exciting thing for Jackson already to have the support of two guys like that whose family mean a ton to this organization.
Right.
So, this is all pretty special.
And obviously some cool parallels there. Not going to call Jackson Holliday Cal Ripken Jr., obviously, but two families that are rich in baseball history, right? Matt Holliday had a fantastic career. Jackson Holliday is the number one prospect in baseball, is promising to have an outstanding career. So you've got a cool baseball family there. And then obviously the Ripkins and what they mean to Baltimore. So absolutely to pass that number on to Jackson, if there was somebody who was going to wear it, Jackson makes a heck of a lot of sense. So Jackson Holliday gets 10 games in AAA Norfolk to begin the 2024 season. And he was pretty good. Hit .333, an on-base percentage of .482, and an OPS over 1,000. Michael Elias said that two of the biggest reasons that Holliday was sent back down to AAA to start this year was that he needed more experience off of quality left-handed pitching. They wanted to see him hit better there because he did struggle against lefties in spring training, absolutely. And they wanted to see him get some more reps at second base. So what did Jackson Holliday do? He got 11 plate appearances against lefties with the Tides, had 4 hits, 2 doubles, and a home run, good for a .1264 OPS. And he got 72 innings at second base defensively. He did have 2 errors, but he had 11 putouts, 19 assists, turned 2 double plays, and had a couple of nice web gems.
Yeah.
So clearly, those were the two things that the Orioles needed to see from Jackson Holliday, and it did not take him very long to prove that the transition to second base defensively was not going to be a massive leap that he couldn't handle, and he mashed lefties about as well as he could have.
In homer in game one. You know, the guy, he started off pretty hot. And, you know, to be honest, when we were at spring training and we were just walking around the clubhouse, talking to the guys and whatnot, it just, Holliday feels like he belongs in that space. No,
sure.
I mean, he feels like a big league player and a guy who is going to really contribute to, you know, the chemistry and the culture within this ball club. I mean, these guys are very young. They're all pretty tight-knit, and you hear that from guys like Corbin Burnes and Craig Kimbrell, who are veterans that have come in and seen what this team has to offer. I think that Holliday's going to offer a lot both on the field and off of it in terms of what he has in terms of, you know, his kind of veteran presence despite being 20.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting kind of vibe he brings to the table because he's been in MLB dugouts and clubhouses his whole life. He's been around Matt Holliday, of course, his dad, but the players that were around him all the time with the Cardinals. So he definitely brings an interesting presence that I don't know is paralleled to any other team.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, he fits right in with these guys. He's the third number one overall prospect, undisputed number one overall prospect, meaning across every single outlet. He is the third number one prospect that the Orioles have called up in the last 3 seasons. You saw Adley Rutschman's debut on May 21st of 2022. Gunnar Henderson debuted later that year on August 31st of 2022. And now we are expecting on April 10th of 2024 to see Jackson Holliday become the third number one overall prospect to join this lineup, which is just ridiculous.
I'd really like to know if that's ever happened before. I would be pretty surprised if it had.
Yeah.
I don't have the facts in front of me whether or not that's happened. It's kind of a difficult thing to find out.
Yeah.
But I would be really surprised if any organization, one, had the option to do that, and two, did it. To have 3 guys in a row come up that were, you know, regarded as the best prospect in the sport. I mean, that is a really special thing that I don't think we can just gloss over, and obviously we're not, and I don't think Orioles fans or Orioles media are. Everybody has been, you know, talking about how great this team has been in terms of its player development and the talent that they draft.
Yeah.
But it's just such an incredibly special thing. I don't think it's far-fetched to say that the Orioles, within the last 3 seasons through midway of 2021, when they were ranked the number one farm system in the sport, that they might have the greatest amalgamation of talent in the minor leagues maybe ever over the last few seasons.
I mean, you look at the lineup and just look at the homegrown talent. It's Adley Rutschman, Ryan Mountcastle, Jordan Westberg, Gunnar Henderson, Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins. I kind of want to throw Anthony Santander in there because he was a Rule 5 draft pick that didn't play above
A Rule 5 pick almost counts.
Colton Cowser and now Jackson Holliday. That is so much homegrown talent.
That doesn't happen.
No.
It doesn't happen anywhere anymore. I mean, baseball just doesn't really go that way a lot of the time in terms of homegrown talent. You don't see that many success stories in one organization, sometimes not even in one division.
Right.
So the fact that the Orioles have done this just can't be understated. It's truly very special.
Yeah. So I think there's two big questions with this Jackson Holliday promotion. The first one being why? Why now is this move being made? And the second one being what to expect moving forward. Let's tackle the why first. I mentioned that Michael Elias said the two biggest reasons that they were sending Jackson Holliday down to AAA Norfolk were because they wanted to get him more experience against left-handed pitchers, and they wanted him to get more reps at second base. As I mentioned, both of those things were accomplished. A 1264 OPS in 11 plate appearances against lefties is not a massive sample size, but he couldn't have done much better than those sorts of numbers. And again, 70-plus innings at second base defensively, the Orioles clearly saw enough to say, hey, he looks good, he looks comfortable there. So those are the two biggest points in terms of what we needed to see from his game and why that decision was made now. I think there's two other important points to make. He will still have enough MLB service time coming up now to be eligible for the prospect incentive put forth by Major League Baseball that says if you win Rookie of the Year or you come in the top three of your league's MVP voting, then you would get a first-round draft pick for your team. So this was right on the cutoff date for the amount of days of service time that the Orioles needed for Jackson Holliday to get him up and have him be eligible for that prospect incentive. So I think that's part of it as well, because the Orioles, we know what they can do with draft picks. They got an extra first-round draft pick a year ago because Gunnar Henderson won Rookie of the Year, and this feels like a very similar strategy with Jackson Holliday.
Yeah, and you know, he has some competition. Wyatt Langford out there, also incredibly
Evan Carter
talented
as well.
Guy. Evan Carter and some other names too, but yeah, you're right. Gunnar Henderson winning Rookie of the Year last year gets them another pick, and they used a compensatory pick to bring in Corbin Burns. So that's valuable in two ways. You know, you can use it in the draft or you can send it out and try to get talent in return for it. And I've said this many times. I'll keep saying it. I think first-round draft picks are more valuable in the hands of the Orioles than any other organization.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at where they've picked some of these guys – Connor Norby, Gunnar Henderson in the later picks outside the first round. You know, it's very special what they can do in the draft, and not a lot of teams have done it before, and I don't think anybody's really going to replicate the kind of talent that Mike Elias has brought in. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely something to look out for, and also damages the take that it was all about the service time.
Yeah.
So there's that too.
So I think that question, if we wanted to divide this Jackson Holliday discussion into why and what to expect, I think the why part of the conversation can also be divided a bit. I think we understand why he is being called up now, and we'll get into more of that as well. But there is, of course, the question of, well, why did he get sent down in the first place? Right? Michael Elias said they wanted to get him more reps against lefties, and he wanted to get some more time at second base. But then the question is, well, why couldn't he just do that in the majors? I do think there is an explanation for it. I don't know if it is the reason, but I'd like to offer a possible explanation here, which is that the Orioles faced left-handed starters in 5 of their first 10 games, which is a pretty unusually high rate of facing lefties over a 10-game span. 50% is pretty high. There are not 50% left-handed starters in Major League Baseball. Yes, you wanted to get Jackson Holliday at bat against lefties, but he really struggled against lefties in spring training. And when Jackson Holliday is on this big league roster, you would anticipate that he's going to start close to every day. We'll talk about his role more later, but I think he's going to start close to every day. Let's say for the first 10 games that you face 5 lefty starters and Jackson Holliday is really, really struggling against those lefties. You don't want to take Holliday out of the lineup, because you want to keep him in there. You want to make sure that he is growing and developing. It's very important for the number one overall prospect in baseball to do that. But you also want to win baseball games. And if Holiday is at the bottom of the lineup, not seeing a left-hander well, that's going to hurt you in big league games. And so what the Orioles opted for here was bringing in somebody like Tony Kemp, who only had 10 plate appearances in the 5 games he appeared in for the Orioles this season. Yes, he didn't record a hit, but he only faced right-handed pitching. You weren't going to do that with Jackson Holiday.
Yeah.
You weren't going to put him in 5 games, get 10 at-bats, and just say, hey, when we're facing a lefty, Jorge Mateo is going to be starting at second base, or Ramon Urias is going to be starting at second base with Westbrook, whatever the amalgamation may be. You weren't going to put Holiday on the bench like that against left-handed pitching. And you know what? Jorge Mateo performed really well. He has 5 hits and 14 at-bats, 3 doubles, all of which have come against left-handed pitching. So Jorge Mateo has been a very suitable option at second base as a platoon bat, and you weren't going to do that with Jackson Holiday. So instead, you send him down to AAA Norfolk, where he can get at-bats against solid left-handed pitching, not as good as Major League left-handed pitching. That's still going to be an adjustment. That's still going to be a jump. But you can get him at-bats against lefties where the outcomes of the game don't impact your big league record.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right about that. And to that point, the Orioles are now in a position, unlike the last few seasons, where there are expectations to succeed, you know? So you're coming off 101 wins. The fans want you to win every single game now. And you don't have the luxury of being able to bring up a guy and let him struggle. You know, they want him to come up and perform, you know? So you, like you said, you want to give him consistent at-bats and not have to hit him with a buzzsaw of lefties. And signing Tony Kemp to that deal was, you know, it's pretty much a win-win. You know, you can't really, it's a very low risk. Because if he struggles, it's really okay. It's not the end of the world. And you're not, you know, the alternative is dampering, it's potentially dampering the production and development of Jackson Holiday, which he just really can't afford. So I understand it. And at the end of the
day, Tony Kemp, by the way, DFA'd in this roster move.
Yes.
If we hadn't said that already, Tony Kemp goes.
Tony Kemp is the resulting move.
Yes.
But I lost my train of thought.
Sorry, I had to jump in there.
No, it's okay. But oh, you know, he wasn't on the opening day roster. Sure, that stinks. But it's been 10 games. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah. G-Man on YouTube asking, was Ramon Urias and Tony Kemp struggling? Did that have anything to do with the Jackson Holiday call-up? I don't think Tony Kemp struggling really had anything to do with this move. I think Jackson Holiday was going to get promoted if Tony Kemp was 0 for 10 or 10 for 10.
I was about to say, I don't know if Tony Kemp could have lit the world on fire.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he was winning a starting spot on the team.
But I do think there is some merit to the fact that Ramon Urias has been struggling. And yes, Jackson Holiday is going to play second base, and we were going to see Ramon Urias primarily at third base. But I do think that has something to do with it, I would imagine. Ramon Urias has gotten off to a very slow start to the season. He has 2 hits in his first 22 at-bats. He is still an excellent defensive third baseman, and he certainly has value on this team. However, he has really struggled in the lineup. He hasn't put together great at-bats, and you have the number one overall prospect in baseball in Jackson Holiday, who, by moving some pieces around, can take a lot of that playing time if Urias was struggling. Because Jordan Westberg, he can get starts at second base, he can get starts at third base. We'll talk about what we think Holiday is going to do and what his role is going to look like, but it's pretty easy to envision a lineup more days than not where Jackson Holiday is your starting second baseman and Jordan Westberg is starting at third.
Yeah.
And Ramon Urias moves into more of a Jorge Mateo type of role where you're on the bench, you're still getting some solid playing time here and there, but
and
you're not
defense,
an everyday starter as anticipated.
His defense will earn him playing time, especially late in a lot of games, whatnot, things like that. And we saw that in Pittsburgh. But I think that, if anything, you know, maybe it had something to do with the call, but I think more it had to do with the solidification, at like basically what you just said, of what the main starting lineup will be, what the Hamptons 5 lineup will be for the Orioles infield. And it'll be Holiday at second, Westberg at third, Gunner at short.
Yeah, and it's not like the Orioles are really, really struggling record-wise. They're 6-4, but
it's been 10 games.
Right, they are in an incredibly competitive AL East. And yes, Ramon Urias is struggling a little bit, and Tony Kemp was struggling. So I think a majority of this decision was, is Jackson Holliday ready? Ramon Urias and Tony Kemp could have been struggling for weeks and weeks and weeks. But if Jackson Holliday was also struggling, they weren't going to make this move. It has more to do with the fact that Jackson Holliday is ready than the fact that there are guys that you want to, you know, maybe have fewer at-bats. So I don't want to say that Ramon Urias struggling is the reason that they called up Jackson Holliday by any stretch.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is at all. But I think we will probably see that in the playing time shift here.
Yeah, I think that the lineup, the starting infield is more solidified due to the fact that Urias has not performed early in the season.
Yeah, so I think that's the why. There is the, he looked good against lefties, played a solid defensive second base down in AAA. They got him up in time for the prospect incentive to potentially get that first round pick. And the guys that he might be taking playing time from at the big league level are struggling a little bit, and you can absolutely justify getting Jackson Holliday in the lineup more often than not. So let's talk about what to expect with Holliday.
Okay.
Adley Rutschman struggled for the first month of his career. Gunnar Henderson, not as much. But Gunnar Henderson in 2023 was still platooned. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind here with Jackson Holliday. I do anticipate that he is going to be close to your everyday second baseman. I think this infield turns into first base as some combination of Mountcastle and O'Hearn. That rotation has looked great so far through the first 10 games of the season. I don't think that's changing. I think Jackson Holliday becomes your primary second baseman with Jordan Westberg or Ramon Urias or Jorge Mateo filling in occasionally. Gunnar Henderson is your everyday shortstop. Brandon Hyde has said that. The Orioles have said that. That's what we've seen so far. And then third base, I would anticipate being mostly Jordan Westberg.
Yeah.
Probably close to every day with Ramon Urias phased in there as well. And Mateo is going to get some reps at shortstop, as will
Center
Holliday a little
too.
Bit. But I think if you're saying, okay, what is it going to look like close to every day? I think it's Mountie, Holliday, Henderson, Westberg.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's your best infield. I think, honestly, I think it's one of the best infields anybody has in the sport.
Sure.
There's a whole lot of talent there, and if these guys play to, you know, the potential we've seen, they're going to be fantastic. Obviously, like we said, they're early into the year. Guys start slow all the time, whatever. But this team is shaping up to have a really, really strong infield. And also, when you have guys like Jorge Mateo and Ramon Urias as your backup infielders, you're in a pretty good spot. I mean, if you look around the league to even the successful teams, not a lot of teams have talented players who've won gold gloves or have been, you know, veteran starters like these guys have as backups. It just doesn't happen all the time. So I think the Orioles are in a really, really good position in terms of their infield and their outfield, but that doesn't matter right now. But I think they're in a really good spot.
And I think Holliday's playing time will more than likely get treated like Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson as opposed to Colton Cowser. I know Colton Cowser is still a top 20 prospect in baseball, and right now, Cowser is earning more playing time with how he is playing. Colton Cowser is absolutely mashing. He has had one of the best bats on this team. He's got four doubles, destroying righties. Colton Cowser is earning more playing time. But he's not an everyday starter because you have three outfielders in Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins, and Anthony Santander that are going to be getting those starts more often than not. I think Jackson Holliday is going to be, and probably should be, treated more like Adley and Gunnar, where they come up, you know the upside, you know the talent, you're going to start pretty much every day.
You don't bring a guy up like this to, you know, sub him in.
Right.
You know, you bring in a guy or bring up a guy like this because he's going to play every day. And that's what the delay was, like we mentioned. So I think that, you know, he's going to be your starting second baseman. You're going to see him in the lineup most days, if not all.
However, I will say, I mentioned it before, but Gunnar Henderson, he played 150 games in 2023, but he got platooned for pretty often. Pretty often.
It was a different situation, though.
Right, but I'm just saying, I don't think it's all that different. Because in 2023, you had Jorge Mateo at shortstop. Gunnar Henderson was playing some combination of shortstop and third base. When there was a right-handed pitcher on the mound, more often than not, Gunnar Henderson was starting that baseball game. because he had that kind of talent. Towards the end of the year, Gunnar was starting against lefties because he established himself as one of the best shortstops in baseball, and he needed to be in the lineup every day, regardless of whether or not he was facing a lefty or a righty. But I know Holiday mashed lefties in the few chances that he had down in AAA Norfolk. I'm just putting it out there that I think there is a solid possibility that Holiday is platooned at second base more often than we expect, because that is what happened to Gunnar Henderson in 2023. He did play 86 games against left-handed pitchers, but he hit .210 with a .618 OPS. He got better down the stretch, but Jorge Mateo was starting at shortstop for a lot of games when there were left-handers on the mound. And Jorge Mateo is still hitting really well against lefties. As I mentioned before, he's got three doubles on the year. All of them have come against left-handed pitching. I think that could happen a good bit
at second base for Jackson. The reason I don't think that will happen is because Michael Elias has made it abundantly clear that the reason it was delayed, his call-up, is that he wanted to see him play against lefties. I mean, sure. If he wanted to see him play against lefties, I mean, you know, why would he platoon him?
Yes, I agree. But I just think that we need to be a little bit cautionary with Holiday's starts, because I do think he is still going to start against lefties. I don't think it's a case where every time there's a left-handed pitcher on the mound, Holiday is not going to be in the starting lineup, and it's going to be Jorge Mateo starting at second base, or Westberg and Arias starting at second and third, whatever the combination may be. I'm just saying that Gunnar Henderson got platooned more often than people anticipated in 2023, and I think Jackson Holiday could have a similar thing happen. Because, look, left-handed pitchers, if you are a good left-handed pitcher, you're probably in the big leagues. There are a lot better right-handed pitchers in AAA than there are left-handed pitchers. Because a left-handed pitcher with good stuff and command is a commodity in Major League Baseball. And so if you have that level of ability, you're probably in the big leagues. So I think the jump from facing a right-handed pitcher in AAA to the big leagues, which is already a big jump, compared to the jump of facing a lefty in AAA versus a lefty in the big leagues, I think that jump is huge. And it wouldn't shock me if Holiday struggles against lefties at the big league level, and it wouldn't shock me if Jorge Mateo gets a good bit of run at second base, given how Mateo is able to hit against lefties. I'm just throwing it out there.
By the way, you know who's scheduled to start on, or not scheduled, but lined up?
On Friday?
Yeah.
You're going to tell me it's a lefty?
I'm going to tell you it's D.L. Hall.
It's D.L. Hall. Yeah.
So, how about that, the old friend?
That will be interesting if Jackson Holiday gets that start on Friday. Look, it's entirely possible that the Orioles also know that Jackson Holiday is the number one overall prospect in baseball, and Camden Yards is going to be packed in anticipation of his arrival. Not that they would make lineup decisions based on that, but it would be good to see Jackson Holiday in the lineup for the first game here at Camden Yards. But we'll see. I do think it could happen a bit.
I mean, yeah, of course it could happen a bit. Yes, absolutely.
I think it probably will happen a bit.
I just think it would be a little bit contradictory for Elias to go and say, hey, this is because we want to make sure he can hit lefties, and then not hit him against lefties anyway, you know? If you've got
whatever wins baseball games.
Yeah.
If Jorge Mateo is hitting better against lefties than Jackson Holiday, then Jorge Mateo is going to play.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. We don't have the answer, obviously, and they're not going to give it to us. So we can only
Mike's not going to tell us?
No, absolutely not.
Come on, Brandon.
I didn't.
What's going on?
I didn't ask him. It'll be interesting for sure. Now, here's a question.
Sure.
What happens if he struggles a little bit?
I think you have to let that happen. Adley Rutschman.
They didn't let Colton struggle last year.
No, but again, Colton Cowser is not the number one overall prospect.
Was he 14 at the time?
All due respect to Colton Cowser, he is an excellent, excellent player, but he is not the type of prospect that Jackson Holiday
is. I'm just saying, I agree with you. I agree with you there.
Colton Cowser struggled a good bit last year.
I agree with you that it's a different story, and you do have to let him struggle. I agree.
Yeah.
But I am curious as to how long that leash will be. And I don't think he will struggle. I'm not saying that. And I'm not hoping he does, obviously. But, I mean, the prospects, when they come up, they struggle sometimes. And
absolutely,
we haven't seen him do that. So I would be surprised if he came up and we didn't see the same kind of production that we've been seeing from jump to jump to jump.
Yeah.
But You have to, I mean, it's a possibility, and you have to think about it.
It's not only a possibility, I think it's probable, because this is just what happens when you jump from AAA Norfolk to the big leagues. Yeah, Jackson Holliday has put up some incredible numbers in his minor league career. His minor league numbers, by the way, just as a recap here, he only got 28 AAA games, and he had an 899 OPS. In total, in the minor leagues, he got 155 games, which is really not a lot.
So, full season of minor league.
155 minor league games. He hit 321 with a 451 on-base percentage, 497 slug, and a 949 OPS. But those numbers do not always translate perfectly to the big leagues, even with the number one overall prospect in baseball. Think about Adley Rutschman. The first 15 games of Adley Rutschman's career, he hit 143. Had an on-base percentage of 226, slugged 196 for a 422 OPS. Didn't have a homer, had one double and a triple. And Adley Rutschman turned out fine.
He did.
So I don't know if Jackson Holliday is going to light the world on fire. I've been surprised about just about everything that Jackson Holliday has been able to do at different levels of the minor leagues. So maybe he proves us wrong here too and just absolutely mashes out of the gate. It would not shock me at all. But if he struggles for 15, 20 games, just don't be shocked, because that's what happens to even the best prospects in baseball.
You think we get a Matt Holliday sighting at the park this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I would imagine we have Matt Holliday sighting tonight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, probably.
I think Matt Holliday.
Well, that's a little different.
He's probably got the means to get there pretty quick.
Yeah, I think he probably could. I'm just saying, like, opening, like, the weekend, his home opener. I guess home opener is not the right word, but his home debut.
Home debut? Yeah.
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 It's going to be exciting. Holliday will be there.
And Jackson Holliday is really going to help this offense. The offense, that was what we were going to talk about on the show today before Jackson Holliday got promoted. But the offense has been on a bit of a skid. They scored 24 runs in the first two games of the season against the Angels, and they scored 23 runs in the seven games that followed. They got back on track against Boston last night with seven runs, and Jackson Holliday is going to provide a massive boost because, as we were talking about the offense, we kind of had categories of guys that you were either worried about or not really worried about. Not worried, you had guys like Colton Cowser, Ryan O'Hearn, Jorge Mateo, Ryan Mountcastle, Gunnar and Adley, Anthony Santander. Those types of hitters you were not worried about in any way, shape, or form. Would like to see some better numbers, but still not worried. You had James McCann, Jordan Westberg, those guys. I think there was a little bit of concern, and has been some concern from fans about guys like Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes. I put them into a category of they have an outstanding track record, so let them ramp up for more than 10 games. Jackson Holliday's promotion does not impact Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes. I can't imagine it would unless he's at second and then Westberg is at third, and then you want to put there would have to be a lot of moving pieces to have one of those two guys be impacted by Holliday's promotion. But the two guys that I had in the category of starting to get a little worried, even though it's 10 games, were Ramon Urias and Tony Kemp.
Well, I can't say that the bar for Tony Kemp was all that high.
You weren't expecting a ton from Tony Kemp. You kind of knew what his role was going to be, and you kind of figured that once Jackson Holliday got promoted, this would probably be the corresponding move because Jackson Holliday and Tony Kemp are both left-handed hitting second basemen, and you're not going to have two of those on the team. But as we have talked about, Ramon Urias' playing time is more than likely going to be impacted, and he's a hitter on this offense that I was worried about a little bit.
I'm going to ask you the tough question.
Okay.
About this team.
Sure.
About this lineup.
Wow.
How do you feel about Austin Hayes?
Obviously, that's a big question that fans have had on their minds for the last few weeks. Austin Hayes has struggled. He has two hits in his first 26 at-bats. Both of them are singles. He is hitless in his last 19 at-bats. He shaved the mustache because he must have thought that wasn't working for him. Brandon Hyde has said that he is not worried about Austin Hayes, but just that he's been pressing and he has been over-aggressive early in the count, which is just leading to some weak contact. But look, this is a guy that made the All-Star team last year. He was excellent in the first half of the season. This is a really, really good player when he is healthy. And he is also an important veteran presence in the clubhouse. He is an important piece of what this Orioles team has done for the last few years. Let's not forget to give Austin Hayes credit for helping drag this team out of the rebuild a lot quicker than everybody expected.
I agree.
So yes, I would like to see Austin Hayes hit better. And I think as Colton Cowser keeps playing, yeah, I mean, we're nearing territory where Colton Cowser should be in the lineup against right-handed pitching, whether it's for Hayes or for Mullins or
for Santander
or whoever. Colton Cowser has done nothing but mash right-handed pitching.
He was so good yesterday.
He only has two at-bats against lefties. He's 0 for 2 in those at-bats. That's not a very big sample size.
I was about to say, that sample size won't hold up in court.
That's pretty small. So I think we're at the point now where I would be surprised not to see Colton Cowser in the lineup against right-handed pitching until he proves otherwise. And Austin Hayes is going to have to get things ramped up here a little bit. But giving him the benefit of the doubt because of his track record, I think he will be fine. I think he will get there. But Colton Cowser's right there.
It's a very tough situation for Austin Hayes, isn't it?
And Hayes' struggles would not be this big of a deal if Colton Cowser wasn't right
there.
That's
what I'm saying, is that his potential replacement's on his heels right now,
right,
which is what makes it a very difficult situation. And like you also said, we're all forgetting the guy was an all-star last year.
Yeah.
You know, like, the guy was an all-star. That just,
The guy can slump for 10 games.
Yeah,
it's fine.
So I think that
the issue is just being exacerbated by Cowser.
Yeah, and you know, listen, I'm happy that Cowser's performing, and I'm excited to see him. And like you said, I think we need to see him against righties every single time because he's a tremendous hitter, and he plays really well in the outfield. He played really well in left field here at the Yard not too long ago. So, I mean, Hayes' defense is something that I think we need to have into consideration because he's a tremendous defender, and he shows that every single time he plays. It seems like he has a diving catch every series.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that needs to be taken into consideration. But you also have to look at what he's doing at the plate, and right now he is struggling, and it just doesn't seem like he has the confidence that he had at the beginning of last season. But I'll also say this. If there's any hitting coach or hitting staff that I trusted to dig a guy out of a slump like this, I think that the Orioles can do it. And again, it's been 10 games, so it's not, you know, the biggest deal in the world. But I think Hayes is fine, and it'll be okay because Cowser's going to get the at-bats. Everyone's worried, oh, Cowser's going to get stifled, whatever. Cowser's going to get the at-bats, okay? He's going to get the at-bats he needs. The Orioles front office is more interested in making the Orioles a good team than we are, and you are. I guarantee it to you.
Yeah.
So Colton Cowser's going to get the at-bats he needs, and Austin Hayes is going to be just fine. But it is going to be interesting to see what comes of their roles this season.
Yeah.
Will Austin Hayes have to kind of start splitting his time? Will Cowser get an at-bat every single time there's a lefty or a righty on the mound? It's going to be interesting. And, yeah, Hayes has to be a little bit a part of the discussion here because he struggled thus far.
Yeah.
But he was an all-star last year, and I think he'll be okay.
Again, I know the comments section is not the place to go, but comments on YouTube saying, you know, Hayes is mid, like he was struggling since the all-star break last year. Okay, first of all, Hayes was fighting through injuries in the second half of last year and was just doing his best to stay on the field. And post-August 1st of last season, from August 1st to September 29th, which is the final 49 games of the season, Hayes still had a 771 OPS with 44 hits in 49 games. That is still a good player, and he's a good defensive left fielder. I can name 29 other baseball teams that are probably starting Austin Hayes in the outfield. So, yes, the struggles are more in your face and more pronounced because Colton Cowser is playing so well, and that is a good problem to have, that a top 20 prospect in the game is on the heels of an established veteran starter who is, yes, struggling a little bit. But 10 games is not a big enough sample size to bench Austin Hayes or to make some sort of drastic move where all of a sudden his role is just reduced to nothing. I think a worst-case scenario for Hayes here, I would imagine, is he continues to struggle and maybe Hayes and Cowser turns into a platoon type of situation.
I'm thinking,
anticipate Hayes losing this job because, yes, he's going to improve after 10 games. He is not going to keep hitting 2 for 20-something. He's going to get better. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Everybody breathe.
It'll be interesting to see how the year goes. That's something I'm definitely keeping my eye on, is that situation in the outfield. But I think what ultimately the story there is that Colton Cowser has already played his way into at-bats. And I think that's what Orioles fans should be really pumped about, because his performance against the Red Sox yesterday was incredibly encouraging. I mean, the guy was tremendous at the plate.
Yeah.
And he proved that, you know, without him in that game, I mean, he had like four or five RBIs in that game. I think it was four RBIs. That's fantastic. You know, without him in that game, it's a save situation.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So Austin Hayes will be fine. I'm getting called out of my mind for saying that he probably starts on 20 and on other teams. Go look at how many other teams
I think there's a little bit of a
all-star caliber outfielders.
That might be a little bit of a high number. But he does start in a lot
I think it's teams. Right up there. I think he starts on pretty much every team in the division. I would have to go through and look at every team's starting outfield, but he is at very least in the conversation everywhere in baseball.
I think
he should be here.
I think he starts on a good amount of teams.
Yeah.
He's a great defender, and he can hit. So I think he's a solid player.
Want to wrap things up real quick with just the Norfolk Tides.
Yeah, man.
They are
shout out to
ridiculous.
Buck
ridiculous. Entering last night's game, they had 10 players with an OPS over 1,000. Before we get deeper into the hitters, by the way, Cade Povich has started 2 games, 11 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned, 14 strikeouts, 3 walks. That's incredibly encouraging because if you need a starter with injuries or whatever, Cade Povich he's looking great. If he fills up the strike zone, that is a dangerous, dangerous pitcher. But the offense is just absurd. I mean, yeah. Heston Kerstad, Kyle Stowers are hitting a ridiculous amount of home runs. They both have 6 so far. Kobe Mayo hit another home run last night. There was a Kobe Mayo home run that looked like it went over the scoreboard. It looked like it went
430.
Looked like it went 650.
Yeah.
If it went 430. Jackson Holliday, there was a funny tweet today that said, well, surely the Norfolk Tides will miss having Jackson Holliday and his OPS over 1,000 on the roster. And then you scroll down, and Jackson Holliday, with his 1077 OPS, was 6th.
Not even top 5.
Was 6th on the team.
Tremendous.
That team's unbelievable.
So good.
You still got Kerstad, Stowers, Kobe Mayo, Connor Norby. I don't know, man. That might be one of the best minor league teams I've ever seen.
I think it's one of the best minor league teams ever, for sure.
Yeah. They're absurd.
They're tremendous. What can you even say?
They're really good. And they will have to try to keep that momentum going without the number one prospect in the game, Jackson Holliday, who is now a member of the big league Baltimore Orioles. A very exciting time here in Birdland. Exciting show here for us. Thank you for commenting along on YouTube and Facebook as you were following along with us here live. We were a little later than usual here on our usual Wednesday time. We're usually at 11 a.m. today. We were at 1 p.m. and then 1:15 with some technical difficulties, but we don't count those. But anyway, that'll just about wrap things up for this week's edition of The Bird's Nest. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you're following along with us live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. on YouTube and Facebook. Or if you didn't catch us live, you can catch us after the fact on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts or your digital shows. You can find us here on The Bird's Nest. Big thank you to Amy Jennings behind the scenes for producing this one. For Matt Bonaparte, I am Brendan Mortensen, and we'll catch you next time.